My name is Satish Kumar. 50 years ago, at the height of the Cold War and at the time of increasing tension between East and West, I started a journey. It was a journey of 8,000 miles. And along the way, I met some of the most remarkable people of the 20th century. I wrote a book called No Destination. And you will hear extracts read by the poet Lam Sise. Come with me and we can relive this journey together. As I started this journey, the words of Mahatma Gandhi were ringing in my head.
There is an indefinable, mysterious power that pervades everything. I feel it, though I do not see it.
Force now faces force across the border between East and West Berlin, in a modest way. But it's a sinister scene. This is the first time that American and Russian tanks have confronted each other, manned by their own crews.
Did Russia explode the 50 megaton bomb this morning? Reports from Scandinavia, from Holland, and from France suggest that she did. Within the last few minutes, we hear that the Americans have reported the biggest nuclear explosion so far recorded.
Mankind must put an end to war, or war will put an end to mankind. Let us call a truce to terror. Let us invoke the blessings of peace.
Men and women! Stand together, do not heed the men of war. Make your mind up now or never, and the bomb forevermore.
One morning, with my friend E.P. Menon, I went to a cafe in the city of Bangalore. My friend had a newspaper with him. And in the newspaper, there was a story.
Shortly after 5 o'clock, when the square, all around the lions and the fountains, when the square was quite full, packed full of people, with thousands of demonstrators there, the order, it seemed from somewhere in the crowd, it was given to sit down.
The story was Bertrand Russell, together with hundreds of his peace activists, were arrested, and Bertrand Russell was put in jail for 1 week.
The defendants today were a very varied assortment of people. There were young men with long hair wearing jeans. There were girls in jeans too. There were middle-aged men, well-dressed, and middle-aged mothers. In the front of the dock, Earl Russell sat with his wife and two other leading members of the Committee of 100.
Why? Because Bertrand Russell was protesting against the nuclear weapons. He was demanding from the British government to ban the bomb.
I feel that if there is even the faintest chance of success in a policy of protest, it is the duty of every person possessed of a spark of humanity to do what he can to turn the world from madness to mercy.
When I read this story, I was amazed. And I said to my friend, look, here is a man of 90 going to jail for peace in the world. What are we doing, young men, sitting here drinking coffee? Bertrand Russell, at age 90, is young. We, at age 25 and 26, are old. We must do something. My friend Menon said, of course we must do something. We are Gandhians, we are peace activists. What can we do? We talked and talked. And in the end, we came up with an idea. The idea was that let us join the international peace movement led by Bertrand Russell and go to these four nuclear capitals of the world, Moscow, Paris, London, and Washington, D.C. And that was a very exciting idea. Then we said, how do we go? And we talked about that. And if we go by aeroplane, nobody is going to take any notice. If we go by car, still nobody is going to take any notice. But if we go walking, Why don't we walk to Moscow, to Paris, to London, and to Washington? Then it'll be a human story. People will be interested. Why are you walking such a long distance? What are you talking about? What is your mission? What is your purpose? So let's walk. At that time, E.P. Menon and myself were working in the Gandhian movement led by Vinoba Bhave. Like Mahatma Gandhi, worked for the independence of India in a political way and led a freedom movement, Vinoba Bhave was a great Gandhian, follower of Mahatma Gandhi. People thought of him as heir to Gandhi. He was saying that as Gandhi led the movement of independence for India in a political way, let us have the similar independence of India in an economic and social way. And so we were working with him. And so we said we have to get his blessings. At that time, Vinoba was in Assam. So we flew to Assam. We sat down with Vinoba and we said, we have a plan. We want to continue walking as we have been walking with you in the last few years. But this time outside India for peace. And so then Vinoba thought for a minute and he said, you are going for peace. You are walking. You need some protection. I want to give you two weapons to protect you in this journey. I was a bit surprised and taken aback because we are for peace. We believe in non-violence. And Vinoba is metaphorically talking about weapons. So he said, what are your two weapons? He said, first weapon is that you are vegetarians, you remain vegetarians. And the second weapon is that you go without any money in your pockets. So I said to Vinoba, that sounds very interesting. We are going to remain vegetarians, but money, why do you say no money? No money at all? He said, no money at all. Wars begin in fear and peace begins in trust. So when you have no money, that means you have to have trust in God, trust in people, trust in the universe, and trust in yourself. You have to say to yourself that I can trust the world. How do you show that you trust the world? How do you be peace rather than just talk about trust and peace? Be peace. And so go without any money, but go with trust in your heart. From Assam, after meeting Vinoba, we traveled by train to New Delhi. We arrived on the 1st of June, 1962, stood at the grave of Mahatma Gandhi and started our journey.
It was under hanging clouds that Vinoba had given us his blessings. And now, standing before the grave, we were once again enveloped by rain and clouds. I seemed to hear Gandhi's soft, almost caressing voice in the falling rain. Don't forget that people are as generous as the clouds and their hearts can be as tender as the raindrops. Gandhi and Vinoba. Vinoba and Gandhi. Somehow, their separate blessings mingled into a single sound.
Whatever money we had in our pockets, we gave it to our friends and family, and we said, from today, we are not going to touch any money whatsoever. And we are starting our peace pilgrimage from the grave of Mahatma Gandhi, because Mahatma Gandhi is the greatest apostle of peace and non-violence, and therefore, paying homage to him will be our greatest strength and greatest inspiration. We walked through India, through the Punjab, and newspapers were writing our story. And particularly, they were writing our story because we started without any passport. We went to Foreign Ministry of Government of India asking for a passport. But they said that you need to put a deposit of 20,000 rupees And we said that we have blessing from Vinoba Bhave to go without any money. Well, how can we find 20,000 rupees to give just a deposit? And it is our birthright as citizens of India to have Indian passport. But Indian government refused. And then next day, the newspapers reported this. And in the parliament, a question was asked to our Prime Minister, Mr. Nehru, who was also the foreign minister at that time. And he said, what? These two peace pilgrims are not given a passport? That is incredible. I will look into it.
This is the General Overseas Service of All India Radio, welcoming listeners in Northeast Asia, Sri Lanka.
We were walking without passport through India, and then on the last day, just before we were about to enter Pakistan, two officials from the foreign ministry came looking for us, and we were delivered our passports. So now we were standing at the Bagha border of India and Pakistan. And our friends, many of our family members, and some colleagues from the Gandhian movement, they came to say goodbye and farewell. And one of my very dear friends came to me in puzzlement and said, Satish, aren't you crazy that you are going to Pakistan without any money, without any food, walking? We had three wars between India and Pakistan. Pakistan is our enemy country. Please don't listen to Vinoba. I will give you some money. And even if you don't take money, at least you should take some food with you. I have brought these packets of food, and I looked at it, and I thought for a second, and I said, no. These packets of food are not packets of food. They are packets of mistrust. What am I going to say to my Pakistani hosts when I meet them? That I did not know whether you will feed me or not. So I have brought my own food all the way from India. That is not a sign of trust. That is a sign of fear. And if Vinoba says to me that go with trust, then I will go with trust. My friend was in tears. My friend said, Satish, this might be our last meeting. You are going to Muslim countries, Christian countries, communist countries, capitalist countries, going through mountains, deserts, snow, rain, forests. You have no money, you have no food, you are walking. How are you going to survive? I don't know if you will come back alive. I said to her, if I die while walking for peace, that is the best kind of death that I can have. So from today, I have no fear of death. And if I don't get food, I will see that day as an opportunity to fast. And whenever I get food, I will bless those who give me food. And if I don't get a shelter for the night, I will see that as an opportunity to sleep under the stars. You can call it a million-star hotel. Then who cares for a five-star hotel? In tears, my friend gave me a hug and gave me her blessing. And then we said goodbye to all our friends and we entered in the border into Pakistan. And as I stood on the soil of Pakistan, the United Nations was talking about the Cold War.
This is John Crawley calling Radio Newsreel from United Nations headquarters in New York. So far, the meeting of the Security Council has been businesslike. Mr. Zorin of the Soviet Union is president of the Council for the month. After a brief opening speech, he gave the floor to Mr. Edley Stevenson, who spoke for just over an hour. He traced the growth of the Cold War, which was due, he said, to the expansionist adventures of the Soviet Union. It was this which led to the establishment of American bases overseas, which were a prudent precaution in response to Soviet threats. He regretted that people at the United Nations seemed to believe that the Cold War was a private struggle between two great superpowers. It wasn't. It was a world civil war, and every nation was involved.
And as we came through the passport control, there was a man standing there, and he's asking us, are you Mr. Kumar and Mr. Menon who are coming to Pakistan for peace? And I said, yes, we are. But we don't know anybody in Pakistan. We have written to nobody, and here you are. You know our names, and you are asking this question. How come? He says, some travelers told me about two Indians coming to Pakistan for peace. And I read in my local newspaper that there are two Indians coming for peace. And I said to myself that I am for peace. This war between India and Pakistan should be complete nonsense. Why should we fight? We were one country before 1947. What makes us separate now? Hearing those words were music to my ears. I have no concept of India and Pakistan being enemies. And I also believe that this war between India and Pakistan should never be there. I said, thank you for coming. He said, I've come all the way from Lahore, 16 miles, to welcome you, to find you. And I was looking for you. And I've been coming for days. I came yesterday. I came day before yesterday. I'm so glad to meet you. At that moment, I realized the oneness of humanity and the essential need for peace. If we come here as Indians, we meet Pakistanis. If we come here as Hindus, we meet Muslims. But if we come here as human beings, we meet human beings. He said, I've come from Lahore. It's a very hot day. I would like you to come to my home. We walked through Shalimar Garden, through the narrow streets of Lahore, through the bazaars of Lahore, into a center of the city where this gentleman lived. So we had a wonderful evening and we rested, and then next morning we started walking. And so we walked the Himalayan range and the Khyber Pass. Then as we were going up, suddenly we saw a car passing by. We gave way and the car passed. Then after about 50 meters, the car stopped. The driver gentleman asked us, do you want a lift? So we said, no, thank you. We are walking. The driver looked out of the window and said, aren't you glad that I'm offering you a lift in this wild Khyber Pass? Where are you walking to? Recognizing his American accent, I said to him that as a matter of fact, we are walking to the United States of America. The driver was puzzled. He actually came out of the car, stood in front of us, and said, do you know where the United States of America is, gentlemen? I said, we have never been there. We have seen her on the map. We believe that the country exists. As Columbus discovered America by boat, we are going to discover America on foot. He laughed. And then he said, I don't believe you will make to America like this on foot. But if you do, here is my card. Please call me. I want to see if you have made it. We took his card and we started walking and came to the border of Pakistan and Afghanistan.
Our average speed on mountain paths was 2 miles an hour. One morning we left at 5 o'clock in the morning. We met peak after peak and not a single village. And so it went on, peak after peak and hour after hour. About 9 in the evening, we heard a few dogs. We followed the sound of barking. Standing in front of a large black tent stood a Pathan. How is your great leader Gandhi? The Pathan asked. He was shocked to hear that Gandhi had been assassinated 14 years before. What a crazy world! The Prophet of Peace was killed by a bullet. The world will never understand the value of such great people. Our beloved leader, Abdul Ghaffar Khan, is rotting in a prison of the Pakistani dictators. Ghaffar Khan is our Gandhi. We knew well of the frontier Gandhi, as he is known throughout India. Mahatma Gandhi had always said, Ghaffar Khan's achievement is greater than that of any of us. We are teaching non-violence to a people who have no weapons and have a tradition of non-violence behind them. Ghaffar Khan teaches non-violence to a people who carry guns.
Afghanistan at that time was one of the most beautiful and most peaceful country that I have ever visited. People with great innocence, living close to nature and close to the land. And at that time, we had a choice of walking either through the north, Mazar-e-Sharif, or through the south, Kandahar. But those two routes would have been much longer. So we chose to walk through the central part of Afghanistan, and there was no road, only a footpath or a caravan route. Camels, horses, donkeys, humans. Then we arrived in the city of Herat, which is the border town between Afghanistan and Iran. That was a wonderful place to be because it was a confluence of East and West. We met many, many Western hippies, beatniks, poets, peaceniks who were searching for wisdom from the East, and they were traveling towards India. So we were in a way amused that we were going to the West and the West was coming to the East. And as we were talking about peace, President Kennedy was concerned with Soviet missiles in Cuba.
This sudden, clandestine decision to station strategic weapons for the first time outside of Soviet soil is a deliberately provocative and unjustified change in the status quo, which cannot be accepted by this country.
And at that time, people in Afghanistan did not feel any kind of Cold War situation. But people coming from the West, they were always aware, and therefore they appreciated our walking for peace. Once we entered in Iran, we were still in the desert. And once we walked for about 40 miles without finding any village. And that day, we had to sleep outdoor under the stars, the Million Star Hotel, and fasting 24 hours. And I enjoyed fasting. And I remembered my early childhood as a Jain monk. We value fasting from time to time. And when you are fasting, you are not thinking about food, you are not thinking about cooking, you are not thinking about anything, but you are more contemplative. And when you have fasted, you celebrate the feast as well. So fasting and feasting, that balance, I celebrated.
The BBC World Service.
To mark the centenary of the outbreak of the First World War, the BBC World Service is presenting a series of debates looking at the legacy of war from around the world. In the first debate, we were in Sarajevo, and this time we look at the war through German eyes. Join me, Amanda Vickery, for a special debate from Dresden examining the methods and morality of Germany's war.
The Allied and Associated Governments affirm, and Germany accepts, the responsibility for causing all the loss and death.
The Treaty of Versailles extracted a heavy toll from a half-starved yet still proud nation. But after the guns of the First World War fell silent, was it right for Germany to carry the entirety of blame for a conflict with devastating losses on both sides? The war that changed the world. Online from the 19th of July at bbcworldservice.com.
My name is Satish Kumar. This is my story of walking for peace from the grave of Mahatma Gandhi in New Delhi to the grave of John F. Kennedy in Washington, D.C. 50 years ago, I walked 8,000 miles without a penny in my pocket with my friend E.P. Menon, delivering packets of peace tea to the leaders of the four nuclear powers. Join me again after the break as I continue my journey.
BBC News with Mike Cooper. A United Nations agency says three-quarters of Palestinians killed in the continuing airstrikes by Israel on Gaza have been civilians. Palestinian officials say more than 120 people have been killed since the offensive began. The US Secretary of State, John Kerry, has begun a second day of talks in Afghanistan to try to resolve a disagreement over the result of last month's presidential election. He's again meeting the two candidates, Ashraf Ghani and Abdullah Abdullah, at the US compound in Kabul. American health officials have shut down two research laboratories in Georgia after a series of safety breaches involving samples of deadly diseases. In the latest case, a mild strain of influenza was accidentally contaminated by a highly contagious strain of bird flu, H5N1. The authorities in the United States have charged a Chinese businessman with hacking into the computer systems of defense companies to steal information on sensitive military projects. Su Bin is accused of seeking data on military planes to try to sell to state-owned Chinese firms. The drummer from the rock band The Ramones, Tommy Ramone, has died at the age of 62. He was the last surviving original member from the group, which he started with three friends from a New York high school in 1974. The band was credited with the invention of punk rock. The former Archbishop of Canterbury, George Carey, has said he's changed his mind on the issue of assisted dying. He said he would now support a bill to be debated next week that would make it legal for terminally ill people to receive help to end their lives. Lord Carey said his change of heart had come in the face of the reality of needless suffering. Rio de Janeiro is preparing what officials are calling the largest security operation in its history for the World Cup final between Argentina and Germany on Sunday. Over 25,000 police, firefighters and armed services personnel will be involved. BBC News.
Wherever we were going, Kabul or Mashhad or any city we walked through, we were always promoting the cause of peace. And we were meeting journalists, radio, television, newspapers, schools, and we were giving talks. Iran was aware of the height of Cold War and the conflict between Russia and America.
It shall be the policy of this nation to regard any nuclear missile launched from Cuba against any nation in the Western Hemisphere as an attack by the Soviet Union on the United States.
So we wrote to the Shah of Iran, and they said that yes, the Shah would like to welcome you as a peace pilgrim, but then came the instructions that we have to come in a suit with a tie. We said, no, we cannot go in a suit. We are peace pilgrims. Pilgrims don't wear suits and ties. We go in normal clothes. So we said to the official in the palace, either we come in our normal clothes or we don't come. And in the end, within 1 hour, we received a telephone call from the palace and said, all right, you come in your Indian clothes. And the Shah would like to welcome you. The Shah was very welcoming and he said, I'm very interested that you are walking for peace. We are on the border of the Soviet Union, so we want to have good relationship and a peaceful relationship, but their communist regime and communist system does not suit us. We are a religious country and we are a traditional culture, and so we have to be more friendly with the Western countries rather than remaining neutral.
The Cuban delegate, Dr. Garcia in Trastegui, spoke for 40 minutes, saying that the United States was the aggressor using force. And if the United Nations did not prevent that use of force, the United States would wipe out the United Nations by unleashing a general war. He asserted that Cuba was arming only in its own defense, and that the Soviet Union respected Cuban sovereignty. The American naval blockade was an act of war.
At that time, non-aligned countries were very important in the political scene. And India was one of the leading non-aligned countries. And therefore, my preference would have been that Iran or Afghanistan or any other country should be part of non-aligned countries rather than aligning either with Russia or with America.
Soviet delegate Mr. Zorin said the United States had bases in 35 countries, and he could see no reason why it should worry about bases in Cuba. It even had one there itself. It was still true that the Soviet government had not sent and was not sending to Cuba any offensive armament. The American blockade was a piratical act. The peoples of the world should therefore be clear that the American action was a step towards the unleashing of a world thermonuclear war.
The most important point in Tehran was to get the Soviet visa. And so we went to the embassy of the Soviet Union and we said that we are peace pilgrims. We are walking from India and we want to walk from here, Tehran, to Moscow, and we have no money, but we want your visa. The embassy official said, "You must be joking. In Russia, no one is allowed to walk like that. So you have to go by train or by bus or by other vehicles. In any case, you have to pay into our tourist department." That was a big hurdle. We went second day asking the same thing. We went third day. For 6 days, we kept going and talking to the officials and no response. On the sixth day, we said to the official, "If you don't give us visa, we are going to walk into the Soviet Union and you have to arrest us and put us in jail." And so on the seventh day, the Soviet Union gave us visa. On 1st of January 1963, we arrived at the border of the Soviet Union. For 40 days, we walked from Julfa, the border in Azerbaijan, through Armenia, Georgia, by the Black Sea, and we were welcomed by farmers and the workers in the factories.
One day, we met two young women and started talking. They read our leaflet, which we had prepared in Russian. A few minutes later, one of them said, "This is the tea factory where we work. Will you come and have a cup of tea and meet our fellow workers?"
So I jokingly said, "Yes, please. Any time is tea time, especially at lunchtime. We will be delighted to have tea with you." So I said, "Please come. We have a nice canteen in our tea factory and we'll make you some tea. You tell us about the story of your journey." So we were delighted. We went in the tea factory. The two women made some tea. And as we were talking to these women, suddenly one of the women had a brainwave.
Moments later, one of the women came back with 4 packets of tea. She said to us,
"Я дам вам 4 пакетика чая с нашего завода."
"Here are 4 packets of tea made in our factory. Please give one to our premier in Moscow, one to the president of France, one to the prime minister of England, and one to the president of the United States of America. Tell them that if they get mad in their minds and think of pushing the button to drop nuclear bombs, they should stop for a moment and have a fresh cup of tea from these packets. That will give them a chance to remember that the simple people of the world want bread, not bombs, want life, not death."
Люди хотят хлеб, а не бомбы, и жизнь, а не смерть.
I was so inspired. I was saying to my friend that now, whatever the difficulty, snowstorm, hailstorm, mountains, deserts, difficulties of any kind are welcome. We have to be the messengers of these two mothers from Armenia. We have to deliver the packets of peace tea to Moscow, to Paris, to London, and to Washington, D.C. and remind these leaders that nuclear weapons are not weapons for using. From Armenia, we walked through Georgia, and we arrived in the town of Gori, which is the birthplace of Joseph Stalin. And then we carried on walking, and we arrived in Sochi, which is a beautiful town by the Black Sea. There we were met by 2 representatives of Soviet Peace Committee from Moscow. They had specially flown to persuade us that we cannot continue walking. They said that the Ural Mountains are too high and all the roads are blocked by snow. For your safety, we have to take you to the other side of the Ural Mountains. So they almost forced us. And we said, "All right, if it's only over the mountain in the town of Voronezh, then we'll walk from there to Moscow." But when we were in the plane, just over Voronezh, the announcement came that due to bad weather, we are flying straight into Moscow. I thought that was strange, and I felt cheated. But you could not do anything. So we arrived in Moscow. Our most important task was to meet Nikita Khrushchev and deliver the packet of peace tea in the Kremlin. So we wrote a letter to Nikita Khrushchev, and he wrote us back and said, I'm delighted that you are working for peace. I cannot see you, but you will be received by the president of the Supreme Soviet, and he will receive the packet of peace tea on my behalf. So we went to the Kremlin and we met the president of the Supreme Soviet, and he said that, you know, Soviet Union has suffered from the war so much that we cannot even dream, we cannot imagine to be again in any kind of war. So it's the Americans who are causing trouble. You must go to America, persuade them, then we are ready for peace, we are ready for disarmament. I said, look, unilateral disarmament by the Soviet Union will make a great statement. And President Kennedy also talks in a similar vein. And so I urge you to disarm unilaterally and set an example and see what the Americans and the British and the French do. And so from Moscow, we walked to Poland, Germany, Belgium, and France. Then we heard the good news.
For many years, the Soviet Union has been advocating the cessation of nuclear weapon tests. Now, this matter has been settled as regards the banning of nuclear explosions in the three environments, in the atmosphere, in outer space, and underwater.
The United States of America, the Soviet Union, and British government have agreed to ban the nuclear tests. But we heard that France has not joined, and President de Gaulle saying that I have nothing to do with nuclear test ban treaty. We want independent nuclear resource and nuclear weapons for France. So we phoned Palace Elysee, and the office of the president replied that the president has no time for such idealistic peaceniks that you are. So please don't bother us. Carry on what you are doing. We felt very disappointed. So 20 or so peace activists joined us, and we went to the Palace Elysee with our banners. We demand an interview with President de Gaulle, and we demand France joining the test ban treaty. And so police arrested us and say it is illegal to demonstrate within 1 mile radius of Palace Elysee. And so we were taken to the prison cell.
It was the first time in my life that I had been in such a place. Everything we had worked and walked against was institutionalized in this place. Fear and mistrust alive everywhere, in the walls, the locks, the sounds. I had not expected that in the land of liberty, equality, and fraternity, we would be thrown into a stinking cell. We had been free like the wind, and suddenly we were locked into an 8-foot square cell. Was this the final point of our journey? Was Delhi to Paris one long road ending in prison?
After 3 days, the Indian ambassador and the head of the police came to meet us, and they said that President is not going to see you. There are only two alternatives. Either you have to carry on and do not demonstrate in front of Palace Elysee, or we deport you back to India. And the police officer also said that, please let me have your packet of peace tea, and if I can deliver it to Palace Elysee, I will see what I can do. So we said, all right, if you take the packet of peace tea, we will see you as the representative of Palace Elysee and President de Gaulle. It's a good compromise. As a pilgrim, we have to be flexible. From Calais, we crossed the Channel by boat and we arrived in Dover. And a number of British peace activists came to welcome us, particularly Quakers, members of CND and Peace News. We walked from Dover to London, and on the way we were welcomed, and many, many big gatherings of people. We were addressing and telling the story of our walk from India all the way to England. And so in London, we arrived and we were received by Lord Attlee on behalf of the Prime Minister. Mr. Wilson, because Lord Attlee was a symbolic leader of the time when India became independent. So he was chosen to receive us and receive the packet of peace tea. One of our deepest desire after arriving in England was to meet Bertrand Russell, who was the original inspiration of our walk. And so we were taken to North Wales, and there we met this 92 years old great philosopher, great mathematician, and great peace activist. And he said jokingly that when you wrote to me from India 2 years ago, I thought to myself that I'm too old and you are walking, I may never see you, but you have walked fast. And I said to Lord Russell, peace is not merely an absence of war. Peace is a way of life. Peace is a commitment to harmony and non-violent way of being. And therefore, just protesting against nuclear weapons is not enough. So our peace pilgrimage has also been a way of reminding people to live in harmony with ourselves, have to make peace with ourselves, peace with the earth, and then making peace with other human beings is also important, because in India we always say peace, which is Indian word, is shanti, and we say shanti, shanti, shanti. So peace within yourself, peace in the world, and peace in the cosmos. And Lord Russell said, yeah, this is wonderful. You are Indians and you have Indian philosophy behind you. But for me, it is important that we remind people the horrors of war. And sometimes fear can be an important instrument to remind people that what they are going to face if they engage in use of nuclear weapons.
Lord Russell, is there such a thing as a clean bomb?
Well, there are bombs in varying degrees of cleanliness. Obviously, since dirty bombs are more effective, dirty bombs are what would be used in war. And these clean bombs are only just to deceive the public. They serve no other purpose.
And so I said, I understand this, but for me, peace does not come out of fear. Fear only leads to war. Peace comes out of trust and love. And so we had a very nice discussion with Lord Russell. I found him most inspiring, one of the most inspiring person that I have met. The courage of this man at age 92, he was in touch with Mr. Nehru, with Chowne Lai, with Khrushchev, with Kennedy, and urging them to not engage in any kind of conflict.
So let us not be blind to our differences, but let us also direct attention to our common interests and the means by which those differences can be resolved. And if we cannot end now our differences, at least we can help make the world safe for diversity. For in the final analysis, our most basic common link is that we all inhabit this small planet. We all breathe the same air. We all cherish our children's futures. And we are all mortal.
And so Bertrand Russell said, you have walked all the way, I hear, from India without money. But now you want to go to America. And there is Atlantic in between. You are not going to walk on water. So can I help you? Can I give you some money? We said to Lord Russell that we have not touched any money since we left India. So with the help of Lord Russell and the peace activists in Britain, we were given 2 tickets in a boat called Queen Mary. So on the day we boarded Queen Mary, on the 22nd of November 1963, we heard the dreadful news of the assassination of President Kennedy.
This is the BBC Home Service. It is with deep regret that we announce that President Kennedy is dead. He was shot down as he was driving in an open car through the city of Dallas, Texas.
We had written to President Kennedy that we are carrying a packet of peace tea for you. And when we arrive in Washington, D.C., we want to have an audience with you and we want to deliver the packet of peace tea to you.
As we sailed the stormy Atlantic, we had plenty of time for reflection. As wanderers, We were free of shadows from the past. The experience of a beautiful emptiness within myself, with neither material nor spiritual possessions, unlocked my soul. It was a journey without destination. Journey and destination became one. Thought and action became one. In wandering, I felt a sense of union with the whole sky, the infinite earth, and the sea. I felt myself a part of the cosmic existence.
In New York, we were received by the peace movement and A.J. Maste, and then from New York, we started to walk towards Washington, D.C. And as you will remember, in Khyber Pass, we were offered a lift by an American. And when we refused that lift, he gave us his card. And as we were walking, I discovered that he lived in the city of Philadelphia.
Oh, where have you been, my blue-eyed son? And where have you been, my darling young one? I've stumbled on the side of 12 misty mountains.
Fortunately, that city was exactly en route between New York and Washington, D.C. So when we arrived in Philadelphia, I took the card out and phoned Dr. Scarf, was his name. And I said, Dr. Scarf, do you remember you met two Indians in Khyber Pass and you offered them a lift? He said, yes, I do remember. Where are they? I said, we are right here in your town, Philadelphia, and we have discovered America on foot. We are here after nearly 2 years. And then we heard British Foreign Minister Alec Douglas Hume.
The murder of President Kennedy should awake us to the shattering effect which naked violence can have on the morale of a nation.
And then we walked to Washington, D.C., and to our joy and pleasure, we were invited by the representative of the President of the United States, President Johnson, to meet in the White House to deliver the packet of peace tea.
After walking 8,000 miles to deliver an appeal to President Kennedy, it was to the cemetery and not the White House that we went to look for him. And it was at his tomb, where the young president had ended his journey, that our walk also came to an end. A long walk from Gandhi's grave to Kennedy's grave. We had walked from the other side of the world for peace and had come to America, the biggest symbol of military power. At Kennedy's grave, there was neither peace nor war, but something beyond. A moment of complete stillness. Gandhi and Kennedy. Kennedy and Gandhi. The grave, the bullet, the rain. The rain and the flame became one. The moment of beginning and ending became one.
We started from the grave of Mahatma Gandhi and we ended at the grave of John F. Kennedy. From a grave to a grave. To make the point that if you trust in the gun, a gun does not only kill a bad person. A gun can also kill a Gandhi. A gun can also kill a Kennedy. Therefore, we have to shift our trust and our faith from the gun to nonviolence and peace. At this moment, our most profound inspiration and wisdom came from Martin Luther King. We met him just after he had delivered one of his speeches.
I refuse to accept the idea that man is mere flotsam and jetsam in the river of life, unable to influence the unfolding events which surround him. I refuse to accept the view that mankind is so tragically bound to the starless midnight of racism and war, that the bright daybreak of peace and brotherhood can never become a reality.
I felt the power of love in the presence of Martin Luther King.
I have a dream today.
And those who think of peace and love have dreams of a new world, a new paradigm, a new future for whole of humanity. But those who think of war have nightmares. We have to realize that it is only the enduring power of love which can sustain humanity. And wars have to become the matter of past history. Wars do not solve any problems. They cause more problems. Although our walk from New Delhi to Moscow, Paris, London, and Washington ended at the grave of John F. Kennedy, we received an invitation from the Buddhists of Japan, saying that Japan is the only country which suffered from nuclear bomb. Unless you make a pilgrimage to Hiroshima, your pilgrimage cannot be complete. So please come to Japan, and we Buddhists will walk with you from Tokyo to Hiroshima. That will be a true end of your pilgrimage. And after that, we traveled back to New Delhi, and we literally ended our journey where we had started. I arrived at the grave of Mahatma Gandhi on the 2nd of October, which was the birthday of Mahatma Gandhi. And there was a lot of celebration of Gandhi's birthday. Many, many people there chanting, singing, spinning the spinning wheel, paying homage to Mahatma Gandhi. And my friend, who had at the border of India and Pakistan been worried whether I will be back alive or not, she was there and she was delighted to see me alive. Those 2.5 years were the highlight of my life. Looking back after 50 years, I feel that at least the Berlin Wall has gone. The threat of nuclear war is now much less than what we feared. However, the Cold War mentality is not gone. There are lethal wars continuing to take place around the world. And these wars are taking place because of fear. And therefore, freedom from fear is the way to peace. Freedom from fear is the peace imperative. Unless we learn to live in trust and trust other people, unless we cultivate a sense of trust, we cannot have peace. Freedom from fear is the peace prerequisite. You have been listening to a Real Soul Movies production for the BBC World Service.